Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I got the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Gilcast. You're either listening to this on the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast feed or the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Football feed. I'm Davis Maddock, joined by Nate Noling and Sammy Reed. If you guys like to come into the shows where we lose, gonna be a bad show. Nate pretty much had the cash game nuts, and I think I don't know about your results, Sammy, but I think we both ended pretty clearly in profit. I do think, very much pains me to say it. I don't think Nate played the optimal team, but I do think he played better than us. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, he did. He did one thing that was really mentally strong, and we'll go over that. Two things. Nate's signaling that he did two mentally
strong things. One of them, the results weren't there, but the process was.
Yeah, not sure about that one, Chief. Let's get into it.
Yeah. All right. So the Gilcast scores. Nate scores 187.32. He plays Tom Brady, Antonio Gibson, Jamal Williams, Cooper Kupp, Hunter Renfrow, Chris Godwin, Foster Moreau, Sony Michel, and the Dolphins defense. Sammy and I each scored 174.08. We played Gardner Minshew, Antonio Gibson, Jonathan Taylor, Brandon Ayuk, Cooper Kupp, Chris Godwin, Foster Moreau, Sony Michel, and the Raiders defense. Clearly what Sammy and I fucked up was the combination of mentally weak paying for a $2,800 defense instead of just punting defense so that we could play Hunter Renfrow instead of Brandon Ayuk. Not that the Ayuk Raiders combo was like, oh my God, I can't believe we did that. It was the dumbest shit ever. But clearly Ayuk and any punt clearly Renfrow and any punt defense was better than, because it there was no reason to play the Raiders defense. Neither of us felt strongly about it.
No, it
was just a mistake. It was just bad.
It was just bad. And I mean, Renfrow is just so mentally strong. I mean, it was a clear spot, right, with Waller out, and Renfrow just gets like all these targets, and
he's like Julian Edelman, dude. Just like West Coast Julian Edelman. Like, he's locked in. He's just getting, when's the last time he got less than 15? So I guess week 11, but he's averaging 15 fantasy points per game. He's had two games in single digits all year. He was a better play straight up than Brandon Ayuk, and it was
Brandon Ayuk is a cuck, and he was getting shut out for most of this game, and we were lucky to get any points out of him, honestly.
Well, yeah, I don't think Brandon Ayuk was a bad play. Don't get me wrong.
He wasn't bad.
There's literally a guy who in cash games, I just think it's expected value. It's positive expected value long-term to get the guys who are going to get targets. I think we love in the fantasy community to overrate the talent, the upside. And I get that Brandon Ayuk is more exciting. Like, yeah, Hunter Renfrow doesn't make it move. A 30, whatever he is, old white guy with balding. Like, yeah, on Derek Carr versus Brandon Ayuk. Like, I get the upside that's there. But at the end of the day in cash games, like, these are 17-week seasons where we play how many weeks of cash games. Like, it is just a plus expected value long-term to take the guaranteed volume. And there was nobody who could have told you going into this game that they thought Brandon Ayuk was going to get more volume than Renfrow.
What was Renfrow owned?
Bigly.
Yeah, he was, in the $25 double up.
I mean, Ayuk was also huge owned. Sammy, our team was a huge train. Huge train, but the even bigger train was our team with the Steelers defense instead of the Raiders defense, which would have been, that's a 6-point difference, which would have been like a clean sweep for you and I had we played the Steelers defense. We lost by 6 points to a huge train, like one of the most duped teams I've ever seen. So right now I'm looking at the giant $25 double up, starting at 402 all the way down to there were like over 3-5% of the entries played our team with the Steelers defense instead of the Raiders.
There was almost a combined like 10% of the field that played the exact same lineup minus D. Like, yeah. So Ayuk was nearly 38% owned. I think he in the $25 double up, he was the third most owned wide receiver.
And Renfro was a slightly less owned at 30%.
Yeah. And I get it. I mean, I think, but I do actually think like long-term, it does make sense to play the guys who are going to get the target volume, even if your upside projection on it is a couple points less. Like in tournaments, I played more Ayuk than Renfro, unless it was a Raiders stack. But like, yeah, I just think in cash games, it makes sense to play guys like Renfro.
Well, and look, I mean, George Kittle had like 50 fantasy points, and him and Ayuk were like, basically what the projections were is people were projecting those guys to kind of split that middle of the field role, and it just all ended up being Kittle. It was all Kittle.
Yeah, but like when you just think of a Las Vegas offense who's going to pass the ball, like San Francisco's pass attempts versus Las Vegas pass attempts, the overall target share, how comfortable Derek Carr feels with Renfro, like the target projection wasn't even close.
No, you are completely 100% correct. Renfro was better. However, I do think that the Jamal Williams play was way thinner than you thought. And this was why Sammy and I did what we did, which was we played, I mean, it really was a 2v2, but it ended up being the 4v4 was Brady, Jamal Williams, Renfro, Dolphins versus Minshew, Jonathan Taylor, Ayuk, cheaper defense. But really it was a 2v2. You know, I think the wide receiver 3 DST stuff didn't play into it that much. And Jamal Williams played 47% of the snaps. Godwin Igbubuke played 39%. Jamar Jefferson played 11%. Jamal Williams was targeted one time in this game. Jamar Jefferson was targeted once, and Igbubuke was targeted twice. And I'm not saying that Jamal Williams was bad, but
look, bro, you go to the candy store and you got all these delicious, you know, you got your payday and, you know, you got your 100 grand, and Nate just, I mean, we just had all these awesome running back values everywhere. And Nate reached for a poop and unwrapped it and ate the poop.
Sammy, this is a bad
truth. The truth is in the middle.
No,
the thing is by Sunday morning, Jamal Williams was not in optimals anymore for a lot of people.
Because I think people overrate matchup. They overrate team efficiency and other things like that when it comes to running backs. At the end of the day, last week, we saw Jamal Williams get 15 targets in five, or 15 rushing attempts in five targets. I had him projected for 65% of the rushing attempt share with a 14% target share. At 5.4K, that is a positive expected value play long term. I understand it didn't work out this week,
but it is in a vacuum. But I think in the context of all of the guys at the running back position this week, I think he is a break even play at best.
If you get a running back at that price who's going to see 65% of the rushing attempt share and 15% of the targets, he long term you will make money jamming in those touches and fading efficiency, team efficiency, and team totals when it comes to running
back. But he had the lowest floor. He clearly had the lowest floor out of Sony, Eli, Gibson, Madison, Connor, Fournette, even Sanders. Sanders has a lower floor.
Yeah, because Sanders, I think Eli's floor every day.
Is potentially lower based on the passing.
Stone disagree. He's getting like 30 touches a game. Stone disagree there. Cannot be
based,
swayed there.
Based on the passing work, there was no way that we could have assumed that last week Eli Mitchell's targets were sticky.
He was the only running back who got a target in this game. for the 49ers.
But San Francisco has shown that is not a part of their offense, where DeAndre Swift literally has shown to be like, that's,
yeah, but Jamal Williams Detroit is not DeAndre does. Swift, bro.
He got 5 targets last week in the
And were all of the running backs active that were active this week?
Jamar Jefferson. Jamar Jefferson was the healthy scratch last week.
But Jamar Jefferson wasn't. Jamar Jefferson ran like 4 snaps or something.
Jamar Jefferson was the one in.
Iguabuke was the one who took all the work.
But Jamar Jefferson was the one who stole the snaps in the game that the game we all played DeAndre Swift and he sucked. I don't even remember who it was against, but Jamar Jefferson was the one who stole the work there.
I don't know. San Francisco, with Jeff Wilson,
he was 5.4, and you get what you pay for. You know,
I agree. I disagree.
This time, but long term, I think if I continue to make plays like this, which I have my entire DFS career, it's profitable in cash games.
What Davis is saying, and what I'm saying is that I think on a normal slate, it is totally fine. Like he was not
total jam on a normal slate. Yeah.
Yeah. In the context of like, there were so many great running back values. And I think originally before it was clear that Henderson wasn't going to play a role.
Well, and before Minshew became playable, Jamal Williams is a total jam if Minshew is not playable because of the salary savings that he provides. Total jam.
Well,
here's my top 4 running backs of the week. I had Sony as the number one, like very clear. I had JT. I had Antonio Gibson. And then I had Jamal Williams, Eli Mitchell, and Fournette. To me, I did look at Jonathan Taylor, and Jonathan Taylor obviously was a smash play. I'm never going to like say that's a bad play. I just think at the end of the day, when you can get 3 running backs with that workload of Sony, Antonio Gibson, and Jamal Williams, and then get the Tom Brady, the Chris Godwin, the Cooper Kupp, like that's the way to build lineups long-term in cash games on DraftKings. Like jam in as many touches as possible, get the upside from the receivers, and don't flake out on, if you miss at wide receiver, it like kills you. And so I don't know.
Yeah.
I,
but Nate, you looked a gift horse in the mouth with Minshew, because Minshew is not a good quarterback, but compared to some of the other 4K quarterbacks that have been played in DK history, like DeShone Kizer, who is the other one that people played this year? There was another one.
Justin Fields. I mean, there's been bad quarterback.
Fields. Remember that week Sammy Galaxy Brain is lined up with Mason Rudolph. Like Minshew is like multiple standard deviations better than those guys. And he was playing the Jets and he runs a little bit.
Yeah, I do think you guys ran well with Minshew. I get the process.
No, we ran bad.
We ran bad. He had like 150 and 2 at the half.
Yeah, he had
the Eagles are these cucks. Madden who starts running the clock out in the third quarter. That's the Eagles. Like we ran
he was
bad
like,
there.
He like didn't throw an incompletion until the second quarter. He ran hot. At the end of the day, to get that from that level of quarterback, you guys ran hot.
Honestly,
there's just no way to deny that. His efficiency, you could not have said that you projected this efficiency going in.
I had him projected for 17.6 DraftKings points, and he got 18.7. So I think he ran – honestly, he got right about to expectation and had one thing, you know, had the Gainwell touchdown, Ben, a passing touchdown, had – that game looked like it was going to be a shootout for a little while.
Are you familiar with the metric that ETR uses? They have a model. It's called the PSM. Are you familiar with it? Okay.
I do not co-sign this. I'm not one of these Gardner Minshew people, but I thought also, by the way, I do think the difference between a $4,500 quarterback and the $4,000 quarterback is something that we don't appreciate. Like Mason Rudolph was a $4,500 quarterback. Fields was $4,800. Like the stone men quarterback. If he gets 15, sometimes it's fine. Now in this slate, this was a super high scoring slate. Certainly the Minshew play goes worse than the Brady play does a lot of the time, but the upside of getting Jonathan Taylor over Jamal Williams, over Eli Mitchell, over James Conner, felt pretty good. And JT ran bad. This was the first game in his career that he didn't get a target. So you lose a little bit of that floor. And they brought in the third string running back to score a touchdown in the fourth quarter instead of letting him get it.
Yeah. Ultimately, you guys did the JT Minshew combo over Jamal Williams and Tom
and Brady.
And for me,
that's basically the 2B2.
That's not what I would have done.
Okay.
But what I honestly would have done is not played Jamal Williams still and not played Cup.
You would have played Deontay.
Yeah.
But essentially, that's what our 2v2 was. The IU Renfro thing, whatever. We've debated that. But essentially, you guys said, I think the floor upside combination of JT and Minshew is better than Tom Brady and Jamal Williams. And that's where I would just say, like, one of those feels very clearly like GPP oriented. One of those feels very clearly cash game oriented.
See, I think JT feels way better for cash because you are basically eliminating any uncertainty. JT never in his life is getting less than 20 here. Never, ever in a million years is he getting less than 20 against the Texans. He rushed the ball 32 times against the Houston Texans, who, by the way, I hate to get my hand in the dirt in this. But the thing that finally got me off, because I had the Brady Jamal Williams team for most.
Tell me it was middle linebacker Zach Cunningham.
Yep. It was the middle linebacker being inactive, and that's why I went Jonathan Taylor. Because sometimes you just need a psychological reason to decide something, right? Like you kind of want to do it, but you're undecided, and sometimes your brain just needs a pattern to attach to, and that was the thing that my brain attached. I was like, I think I saw Thorman tweet about it. I think Thorman said, X, Y, and Z, this guy's out. That's going to have an impact on their run defense.
This is incredible. And you saw Eric. Did you see that Eric Kendricks was out though for Minnesota?
No, I don't know who that is.
Yeah. He's one of the best linebackers. Should have got him on Jamal Williams.
The last thing I'll say on this discussion is just, I think overall the fantasy industry, and I get like, this is what we do, is overvalue context and get prideful about our ability to analyze a slate in a vacuum versus at times it's just as simple as like play the most touches in your lineup, be a profitable cash game player. And I think at times we overvalue context and our
JT got the most touches of any running back. 32 buddy. 32.
We like touches.
Fading guys like Jamal Williams at his price long-term does not seem sharp.
I would say in general, average week where we have like five running backs that we're considering, I can totally buy that. In this week where there were, I think we had 12 positive value running backs on DR. ETR had even more than us because they were a little bit higher on Gaskin than we were. I don't think the Jamal Williams play was bad.
But you spend the money on a quarterback. And you're talking about us running hot with Minshew. I mean, Tom Brady threw for 360.
No,
it's not Tom Brady running hot. This is who Tom Brady is.
Yeah, it's just what the Bucks want to do.
Clearly he was a really good play, but to have like every single one of their touchdowns go through the air is like
they lead the NFL in
pass to run ratio
and not in general, but in the red zone. They are the most pass rate over expectation team in the red zone in the NFL because they want Tom Brady to win the MVP. Brady wants to win the MVP. We just all know this.
And he's going to win the MVP.
He is going to win the MVP. Yeah. So is there anything, I mean, didn't consider for a second swapping off Sony. Didn't consider for
let's,
a second.
Let's
not
talk about that.
Foster.
I thought that was really interesting because Daryl Henderson was ruled active. And here's the thing is that, you know, the Sharps figured out and, you know, I was out like doing family stuff and I saw it on Twitter and I texted Davis and Davis is like, no, it's fine. Like they just have them active.
I do actually think, by the way, looking at ownerships and tournaments and in cash, I do actually think some people swapped off of him.
He was more widely owned than I thought he'd be. I thought more people would jump off of him. What do you think was driving that?
So I'm looking at the red zone and I see him at 25% in the big red zone. When he was the number one points per dollar value on every site that does projections. And I'm looking at the giant $25 double up and Sony was less owned than Gibson. And Gibson obviously was a fantastic play too, but I actually do think some people, maybe 5 to 10% of people swapped off him because Henderson was active. Because if you were just playing it straight up, he was the best play on the board.
Yeah, I agree. But I think I understand why his ownership was the way it was. As you're building, there is no swap options at
it was Pat Freiermuth or Deshaun Jackson.
And I think in this week where we talked about so many running back values and everything else like that, I understand why some people at 1150 are like, if I don't have clarity in this situation.
Well, there was another swap out there where you could swap off Cup and you could play Deontay and someone. I think maybe some other wide receiver, some other decent wide receiver. I don't remember the exact swap, but it was Cup to Deontay and then Sony to some like 6K guy.
I think Mitchell.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was probably that.
I looked at a swap. I thought it was like Cup to McLaurin and Mitchell over Sony or something. But yeah, there weren't a ton of swap at that specific price tag. And so I do think I understand why people like faded, because ultimately you're just analyzing news. Like,
but if Schefter tweets at 9:45 Central Time, Daryl Henderson's, not only is he not the emergency back, he's just out. Sony's going to be like 80% owned. Yeah, 80, I think. Yeah,
for sure.
So I think that was one of the things. Let's see.
He ended 43% in cash, right around there.
Yeah. I have the ownerships. I have the ownerships pulled up right now. So we also all played Cup, who was only 42%, which is interesting considering that he's Cooper Cup and got the bonus, scored a touchdown. It was looking kind of tenuous there for a second, though. I think he had zero catches in the first quarter. I think he had 2 for 13 before the last drive of the second quarter, actually.
Cooper Kupp is just a stone goat, because he was getting shut out and we were tilting our faces off because that chucklehead, whatever, like number 18, that guy like caught a 35.
Oh yeah, Skoronek got on the board before.
Yeah. Skoronek, the jabroni. So he gets 35 yard pass and Cup's got nothing. And the Rams are up and we're like, this is really bad for Cup. And then, you know, I go vape for a minute and I come back and Cup has the bonus and a touchdown. It's so great.
That Cup ownership is just shocking to me. There's no other high price wide receivers that were like, there's no Diggs.
Jefferson was 13%.
But like Minshew was 30%. I'm surprised Cup wasn't way higher. Like, I don't know how people built. Like,
did either of you guys consider Devontae Parker? I see that he's 14%. He was in cash. I remember looking at our optimals and he was in like optimal number, like 53 out of 150 or whatever.
It was just the way the slate broke down, where I did have him in some GPPs as like as my salary saving guy, because he was popping in models. But like at the end of the day, all the value was in running backs. So you want to spend at receiver, right? You're getting this free money. Like you don't want to punt and have a guy who's coming fresh off of injury who can really just tank you out when other people are getting points from such luminaries as Brandon Ayuk, right? So yeah, I did not consider Parker in cash.
Yeah.
How about Godwin getting 17 targets? Like,
yeah,
that was nice.
Yeah, obvious play smashes.
15 for 143. This is such a different thing about DFS now versus like 5 years ago. Is like Godwin coming off that bad game would have been like way less chalky.
Yeah.
But now everyone just knows, which is a little unfortunate. Was definitely a prove it week though. I thought if you played anyone other than Brady or Minshew at QB, you were dust. Honestly, I think if you played anyone other than Cup, Godwin, Ayuk, Renfro, or T as your wide receivers, I think it was not great. And honestly, I think if you didn't play Foster Moreau, you just don't get the mechanics of the game. Like I think Moreau is an awful tournament play, but I think that he was just stone cold optimal in cash.
Yeah, and he was like 70% in cash or something like that. He was so highly owned that even though he had a bad game, like we weren't stressing on it at all because it kind of didn't matter.
Yeah. And I mean, he was he was so owned in tournaments, 40% on Moreau in tournaments. Just,
oh my God.
So bad.
There's still an edge. Why are we playing cash? Like, why are you playing cash? We have these fish out there playing Foster Moreau in GPPs.
Because people Nate, don't play Tom Brady in cash games.
Nate did it. Nate, I think your team was good, but I think that what you did at tight end was bad. So why don't you go through your red zone team first?
Well, one second. I want one more cash game. Did you guys consider Javonte Williams at all? Like, why were we not?
Sir, Nate, he was in the night game.
Nate, sir.
Oh.
He would have been more owned than Sony. He would have been 95% owned, probably. People love Javonte.
That was tough. That was tough.
Yeah. All right. So red zone. What was my team? I had Brady doubles everywhere.
It's just like, hold on.
He's just looking at his spreadsheets and he sees all of Javonte's expected points.
Yes, I'm like looking at running back. I'm like scrolling for Jamal Williams. And I'm like, oh crap. What? Javonte? Why didn't I think of Javonte? Yeah, like it. All right. What team? Okay. Oh, wait. Should I do the Moreau team that you guys roasted me on?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. So I did I think I only really played two like stacks. I did Brady stacks and then I had some Vegas stuff. So Brady was just a smash play this week. So I had, in the spot, I had Brady, Evans, and Godwin as the stack with Russell Gage as the bring back. I knew that Mike Evans and Russell Gage were going to be really low owned. I thought Evans was going to come in at single digits. He came in slightly over, but I was very confident Russell Gage was not going to be owned. So I thought I could get a little more chalky with running backs. So I went with Jonathan Taylor and Sony Michel. One other leverage spot that I felt good about, especially with Minshew, was Miles Sanders. I thought Miles Sanders was going to be the play.
I played him a little bit.
Yeah. 100%.
I thought Miles Sanders was like the same play as Elijah Mitchell, except like a fifth of the ownership.
Yep.
A guy who's not going to get a ton of pass work, but I actually thought he had more pass work and cheaper and better ownership. So I got Miles Sanders. I felt like I had plenty of leverage. So then I figured, then I followed it up with, Moreau and Raiders. And
oh my God, Nate, Jesus.
Okay. Here's the thing at tight end to fade a 2.7K guy. I have to find someone that I feel extremely good about like their upside, and outside of Kyle Pitts,
you just cannot be playing 40% on punt tight ends, dude.
You can't be serious. James O'Shaughnessy is right there. Like, yeah.
Okay,
easy game.
I disagree.
He had the same volume projection as Moreau. This is like your thing, dude. He had the same volume. He just was projected for worse efficiency because he's on the Jaguars.
Yeah, you have Dan.
I didn't have him close
at 2.6, and he's not owned. Like, how do you?
He led the Jaguars in targets.
I see that, but I didn't have him that close. It was giving up like 2 or 3 points of expectation.
I had him 3 points worse too, but I had them for the same. I think literally the same market share of the team's targets.
Would you have
played $2,600 Dan Arnold? If Dan Arnold was $2,600, would you have played him over Foster Moreau?
Of course.
I mean, I'd have to look at my projections, but probably. But wait,
I don't want to get into the mic.
At a macro level, at tight end, unless I have a Kyle Pitts or a Rob Gronkowski or someone that I think can actually separate from the field at tight end.
Yeah, George Kittle, bud.
Okay, you can't do that in this lineup. I only had 2,700. I wouldn't have been able to build this lineup if I got up to one of those guys. And so punting off at tight end, taking the 44% owned guy, when you know that the rest of your lineup has enough leverage, enough spots.
Unforgivable.
You guys just get blinders on. I don't.
No, it is, especially when you know that you have the most owned double stack.
It's not the most owned double stack. I had a 4% owned bring back that after the morning games went off. I had no reason to get more leverage on this lineup. I wanted to be as highest projection possible because I was in fourth place after the afternoon to take a 3-point expectation loss when you know you are nowhere near duped. You are like
How many points did you have after the morning games?
I was in fourth place or something.
Nate, you're saying you don't want to get into the weeds. You want to look at it macro level. Macro level is playing a 40% punt tight end in tournaments.
It's just bad.
It's not gonna get there. It's not.
I mean, I see the point that Nate is making, that like his lineup was
to give
good,
up so expectation just so that you can have a low owned guy at a tight end position where it's just, you're not gonna separate there. I'm not getting Kyle Pitts where I have a 20 point. I have a potential to run away. You guys are just take the 10 points.
What was your flex in that lineup?
Michelle.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, like,
I was like in fourth place going into the afternoon games with Foster Moreau, Sony Michel, and the Raiders D. And I had a 4% owned Russell Gage. I had a 10% owned Mike Evans. I had the nut double stack with a Jonathan Taylor and Miles Sanders. It was a 220. There was no reason to get more leverage. Like, why would you give up projection just so that you can show and be like, oh, I was.
You gotta get the.
Honestly,
leverage,
I just didn't build any teams with to even have a min price tight end because I thought that was the edge this week. I thought the edge of this week was just building lineups to be different than that.
Yeah, and I guess that's fine. I felt like the edge was getting as much Brady exposure as possible, finding other ways like Miles Sanders, like Russell Gage,
I'm also different in that way because in the smaller field stuff, like in like the $12 and the $27 single entry, I'll do the most owned double stack if I really think it's really good, which I did this week. But in the 50, the 100, the double spy, I just like when I go make those teams, I'm basically like players from that offense that is going to be the chalkiest, I don't play them like a huge chunk of the time.
I get it.
I'm looking at the team that won the red zone. This is so funny. So it was a Minshew Goddard stack, but the guy did it in the reverse. He played Kittle at tight end and he played Goddard at flex. So like he also played Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. So he did that to get off of Brady.
You know, let me just say, Nate, you're talking about giving up expectation for ownership, blah, 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 blah. Like, you have to understand, like, GPPs are not a spreadsheet game. It's a little bit more of an art. And, you know, that's it cost you. You had a good team, but Foster Moreau, tough scene.
Yeah. All right, Sammy, what was your team?
I did a bunch of single entries. Okay, I did a Stafford double stack. So one of my favorite things,
I thought this was a good angle.
Yeah, I did Stafford, Kupp, and Van Jefferson, and I brought it back with O'Shaughnessy. So I thought that was just a good natural way to go because Sony was going to be widely owned. And so I wanted to have exposure to the Rams passing game, and Moreau was going to be widely owned. And so it was really natural to get O'Shaughnessy as the pivot there and also the bring back in that double stack. So I really liked that angle, did it in a lot of lineups. My running backs went with a 3 running back build. I went Madison, James Connor, and Josh Jacobs. And you know, we debated the Josh Jacobs on the Swolecast, Davis. But I thought he was.
I was on the Jamal Williams side. I was with Nate.
I know.
I love the Jacobs in tournaments though.
Yeah, I'm expecting that PayPal transfer. Go Josh Jacobs, 9 targets and a touchdown. We love to see it. And my cheap guy, my cheap receiver in this lineup was Josh Reynolds. And I did in fact play.
I think that's fucking terrible, but.
Well, I mean, it is what it is. I played the Steelers defense in this lineup. So it actually did not cash. I think I scored 158.7, but that was not going to get it done in this day on this high scoring Sunday. But I like the ideas behind it. You know, it was one of those things where, you know, you really wanted to, there was so much running back value. I didn't play Antonio Gibson in any tournament lineup. I didn't play Foster Moreau in any tournament lineup.
All right. So I had a sweat again, didn't get there. Actually, literally the exact, I've gotten 8th in the big red zone with 6,500 people twice now. So I played, let's see here. I played, this was a just, I all week I did a Swolecast and everything. And I said, I want to do I want to do Justin Herbert double. So I played Justin Herbert with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, T. Higgins as my bring back. And this is the part that I wanted to talk about because I actually think it's interesting. So
is,
I played the,
is it that we played all, you played all of our troll cash game players like Keenan Allen and Higgins and they just
no, I played,
that's the move.
I played the three chalkiest running backs. I played Elijah Mitchell. I played Antonio Gibson and I played Sony Michel. The reason why this lineup, the reason why I had a sweat, I mean, obviously T went nuts, but George Kittle had 42 DraftKings points and the Lions defense at 2% owned got 5 points, which is whatever. It was just the only way to make the lineup work. And I mean, I thought that the Bengals Chargers game was like the obvious, way to get past the Brady chalk. I thought George Kittle was the best play at any position this week because to get my hand in the dirt. Without Debo, Jimmy cannot throw outside the hashes at all, literally cannot do it. So he can only throw in the middle of the field, and either Ayuk or Kittle was going to have to get the ball that way. And obviously, I got super lucky. What Travis Homer scores on a fake punt touchdown, and just in general, the Seahawks, I mean, they scored 30 points. It was like that was like more points than they had scored in their previous three games with Russell Wilson back combined. But do you guys think that with 11% on Herbert, 9% Keenan Allen, 4% T, 5%, 9% Mike Williams, 6% on George Kittle, it's fine to play the three most chalky running backs, or yes. Is that still yes. A bad look?
No, that's totally okay.
I think it's
that's the crux of the conversation is when you get off at certain points, can you take the highest projected plays in other spots? And the answer is yes. Like,
I mean, the answer is yes, but I think it's different than a min price tight end. Like that's, I think that's, and a 70% like min price tight end or 40%, I guess, in tournaments. Like I would rather eat the chalk on running back because the projection is so less fragile.
It does feel like also tight end range of outcomes are much wider. Like running backs are very rarely getting four. And also, you know, there are just more playable guys at running back. So it feels like creating the differentiation in points at tight end because they're not accessible, anywhere else. Like it feels like getting a tight end that outscores every other tight end by 10 feels like a huge differentiator.
I would agree with that, but that only happens at the top end. That only happens with the George Kittle, Kyle Pitts, Travis Kelce
right.
guys, which changes your whole build. So at 2 point, whatever, when you only have that, you're not separating from the position in a meaningful way. So don't take the loss in projection because you have a chance to bury yourself and you don't have the same upside that leverage gets you. Where at running back, you actually can at 5K separate by 20 points from the field. You cannot do that at tight end. Like that's just not happening. James O'Shaughnessy isn't scoring 25 points. Like,
yeah, but
so you're taking.
But if O'Shaughnessy gets 10 and Moreau gets 5, that's still leverage. Like yeah. 5 points is a big deal in tournament lineups.
Yeah, I mean if Kittle, so they are they had fourth and goal from the three or whatever. If Kittle catches a touchdown on that play, I get second for 25K. I'm not bitter. It's fine. It's fine. But
but Kittle could have manned up a little bit in this game. Right?
I mean, Kittle, just if you get 55 DraftKings points, it's that's like half a Bitcoin for me. So, actually had Eli Mitchell scored, I would have done the same thing. Or I think I would have gotten third had Eli Mitchell scored. So thanks, Jimmy.
These days, it's probably more like 0.75 Bitcoin. I haven't checked, yeah. But
I agree, and we talked about on the Swolecast that George Kittle was, in fact, one of the best, probably the best in retrospect tournament plays that there was because he created...
Not leverage. In retrospect, in previous spec. I told you on Wednesday, I said he's the best tournament play.
Buddy, I was touting him too. I was not a... Yeah. Yeah, I was...
I should have played Fucking Jacobs in this lineup.
I know. He'd been mentally strong. Yeah. But... I mean, just think about it theoretically, where Mitchell was going to be highly owned, and Ayuk was going to be highly owned. So, and Moreau was going to be highly owned.
And Kittle is the best player on the team anyway.
Yeah, and Kittle's a stone beast. So it all made sense.
The reason why Kittle wasn't
so good.
The reason why he wasn't more chalky with no Debo was one because there was a very obvious roster construction this week that everyone did with the Bucks doubles and Rams doubles, even I mean, you know, 11% Herbert, 9% Keenan, 9% Mike Williams. Like those were pretty popular as well. And it was just very hard to fit an elite tight, because people wanted to play Jonathan Taylor. People wanted to play Alexander Mattison. People wanted to play Fournette. So it was just harder to get there. And you had to punt defense. And how, I mean, how owned was the $3,300 Dolphins outlook right now?
I also agree.
They were 27% owned. So people were still really trying to pay up for defense.
Yeah. That's also so bad. But I also agree with Nate that Miles Sanders was a tremendous tournament play.
I played Miles Sanders in my Buccaneers double as that leverage point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And pretty much all of my leverage, like projection statistics stuff, it's almost all running backs because it was so, it condensed, the field condensed so much at running back this week. And there were so many good running backs that like Miles Sanders was literally the top of the sheet.
Yeah. And can I just, I mean, Josh Jacobs, I also thought was a really strong tournament play because Antonio Gibson on the other side was going to be really widely owned. And then Moreau was going to be owned. Renfro was going to be owned. And Jacobs, I mean, really this pass game role of his is really growing in a way that I think is kind of being under.
And Jalen Richard was inactive.
Exactly. So I thought, I mean, Josh Jacobs was 0.7% owned. Like, I mean, I was really happy with that outcome.
I'm also looking at some of the double ups, and the reason I to go back to cash, I just our shit was so duped, Sammy, that we chopped so that we cashed, but we were getting like $24 back.
Oh yeah, yeah,
it double was, up.
Yeah,
I didn't realize
we,
that.
We get our rake right refunded now. For this. It'd be cool if we did. Yeah.
All right. Do we want to look at some of the salaries for next week and then get out of here?
Sure. Yeah.
So
what I need to do is see what Deontay Johnson is, because like my brand is just taking a complete hit in the butt.
Not on the main slate.
Ah, tough.
So Tampa Bay and Buffalo play next week. So
where do they play?
In Tampa Bay. So okay, no weather.
Good. I was going to say.
Yeah. Cause this game on Monday night is going to be rough. San Francisco and Cincinnati play. Seattle plays against Houston. So we'll have the, you know, do we believe in the semi Russ resurgence? What he got?
Oh, I was going to say, are we getting a reboot of Adrian Peterson and cash, baby? Let's go.
He is 4,700. the Saints play the Jets and Kamara is 7,900. Sheesh.
Yeah. I mean,
no with, Cooper with Cup on the main Hill slate.
In there, he's been borderline useless. I don't think you can pay for him.
I don't see any, like nothing is leaping out to me right now. It's like, oh, I gotta jam that guy.
Well, I mean, CPAT is under 7K.
He just gets there. I mean, he got 12 points yesterday without a touchdown, and he had a touchdown in his hands that got ripped out by the defender. So
it's going to be interesting. I know that Melvin Gordon probably has a decent chance to play, but Javonte Williams will
5,900.
Be the all-time chalk. He will be Antonio Gibson levels if Melvin Gordon does not
play. What about Amir Abdullah, $4,800 against the Falcons? What are people going to do there with the timeshare between him and Hubbard? That seems kind of interesting because Abdullah's playing all the passing downs.
What's the pricing?
$4,800.
Dang. Abdullah would be interesting to me more than Hubbard.
Saquon Barkley is down at 6,000.
Yeah, it's too expensive.
Yeah, too expensive.
I think Rex Burkhead for 4.6 moves it more than Saquon for 6K.
Lamar.
Well, Burkhead didn't get the workload that we would have expected. They like that was a weird game.
They were probably using like Jalen Samuels was in there getting touches.
They scored
0 points. It's like,
I actually thought Burkhead was an interesting sprinkle in tournaments. Yeah. But he, let's see, what did he?
I mean, they just had like no success. Yeah,
Royce Freeman saw more snaps or more, I guess. Yeah, Jalen Smith, Royce Freeman. It was a three-headed monster.
I'm already getting bad vibes from this slate, to be honest.
Yeah.
CD. Amari Cooper is 5,900 though. against the Washington football team.
I like that.
So he'll be there.
Well, he's less expensive than Hunter Renfrow, as he should be.
Yeah. Tyreek at $8,500 is interesting because the Chiefs are just so fucking gross now. Like, I actually don't think he'll end up being that popular. I'm getting bad vibes from this. I'm shutting this down. We need some injuries.
Well, here's the thing.
Need some injuries.
Nobody wants to play the Chiefs anymore because the narrative is that
The Chiefs don't even want to play the Chiefs anymore. They don't even want to be themselves anymore.
I may be into recalling the Chiefs double stack on this slate.
Yeah, no thanks, dude. All right, we're getting out of here before we start touting Patrick Mahomes, who's now Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback 16 since week 6. No thanks. All right, everyone, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.